The thought occurred to me, what would I do traveling alone if I lost my phone? Have you ever thought about this? What would you do? How do you, because I don't know any phone numbers. I wouldn't be able to call my wife. The only thing I could think about doing was I would have to call where my son works, ask for him, and maybe he could then give me some phone numbers, and then I could start to do something. But without a phone, everything I have is there.
And how are you going to call him? Because there's no public payphone.
And I don't carry, well, I don't carry cash. I think, as you know, I have a very minimalist wallet. It's a rubber band. And I carry a credit card, my driver's license, and then my business card, credit card or debit card. And so I don't have cash. I haven't used cash in years. And oftentimes I just use my phone instead of even using the cards, you know, use the Google Pay or whatever. I don't know.
Tap your watch. No, I agree. Melissa has moved to, like, everything gets done through her watch mm-hmm. now. She just goes to a thing and scans a thing. And we went ice skating, and to pay to go on the ice rink, you just had to tap your watch against the little tap plate. It's so easy to pay and to whatever. And to your point, if you were lost and you didn't have, you wouldn't have your
you money, lost your phone, you're in a different
city,
you
wouldn't be able to phone someone, you wouldn't be able to check maps to see where you are or get directions to whatever. Oh, and then you'd have to go around and ask someone to borrow their phone.
Oh, yeah. Or you'd have to, like, I guess you would buy a phone, and then you've got to try to figure out, well, I wouldn't be able to get into all of my services because all of my passwords are on LastPass. I guess you know what I got to do? And this is the problem. LastPass works great, except I don't remember. I just changed my master password to get into that, and I have it written down in my top drawer of my desk. I don't remember my master password, which is probably a pretty bad thing to not remember.
So do those password things just make it so they remember all your smaller passwords, so you just remember, you just need to remember one password?
One. You remember a master password, and on my phone, I just use my fingerprint ID, so I don't even have to type in the password to get into LastPass. And then it lets you set up passwords for every single website that requires passwords. You can have up to like 100-digit passwords. So it's like massively long and just all weird characters and numbers and letters and stuff. It's just gibberish.
Your password for LastPass, is that a gibberish as well? Or is that
something that you need to know?
Because you need to know that, right?
You have to know it. And so you need it to be sort of complicated, but one that you can remember. I think a lot of people are opting more for a phrase. But still, you want to have numbers and odd things. So I've come up with kind of a scheme using various password conventions I've used over the years and combined them into one sort of longish password. I guess it's probably 12 characters long, but I can't remember it right now. And I need to commit this to memory. I need to commit it to memory because I don't know. I don't know what to do.
And you always need to have numbers, and you always need to have like a special character.
Special characters, yeah.
Exclamation mark or a question mark or something like that. And they say you're supposed to do stuff which isn't proper words because you use different large caps and small caps and all of the rest. Because apparently when they run like password hacking software, they just go through all numbers and establish words first in combinations of said.
Yeah, the worst thing you can do is just actual words or your birthday or whatever, you know.
So it seems like the worst password is the one that is easy to remember, and the best password is one that you'd never be able to remember ever. So therefore, it's a completely useless password.
That's the point with LastPass, I guess, is it's supposed to prevent that. But if they got your master password, then that would be, although it does have the two-step authentication. But here's another thing. I have known two people, actually three, within the last several months who have had their Google accounts hacked and their YouTube channels stripped. And one guy has had it happen twice, and it's the same thing. These people get in there, and this is with two-step authentication. He had them go into his account his Google account and then just turn off two-step authentication, and he has everything in place that you're supposed to have in place. And yet they were still able to get it. They did some crypto scam on his YouTube channel, got rid of all of his videos. Luckily, YouTube has a way of kind of undeleting this stuff and getting, it's a big hassle. And then I had another guy who I haven't spoken to in probably 5 or 6 years who just contacted me this week and was like, I need help. I don't know who to contact on YouTube. And my whole channel is gone when now it's like some crypto thing that they're running a scam on. That's why I changed my master password, because I'm like, oh, I changed my Google passwords. I changed everything just recently just to kind of like, and Google also has this, it's like special numbers. Do you know what they call those that you can get? Security codes. So these are backup codes that you can download from Google when you're setting up your two-factor authentication. And they'll give you 5 different numbers. It looks like a series of 8 numbers followed by 1 dot and then another 8 numbers. There's a long string of numbers. I'm not exactly sure what you're supposed to do with these, but apparently the guy who just got hacked into last week, he said, one thing I recommend is get those security numbers. So I got the security numbers. I don't know what to do with them. I have them here on my phone.
And to your point, when you lose your phone, someone's going to find those numbers.
So what good is that? It's on, yeah, yeah.
Take all your money.
It's just surprising the amount of secure stuff I keep on my phone, on Google Keep and stuff.
It's interesting because I sign in a lot now. When I sign into stuff, they'll be like, sign in with Google. And then you can just click the Google thing and you sign, like one click, and it remembers your path. And I realize the more sophisticated we've got with the passwords, probably the easier it is now to like get into someone's business, because now that you have everything with Google, to your point, if you get into someone's YouTube account or someone's Google account, now you have access to everything. Being able to sign into someone's Google account now means you can sign into other places through said Google account. So I don't know if it's... I remember the old days where you just used to have two words and a number, and that was it. Mine is...
Do you know a YouTuber? She's kind of big in the gaming tech, is Nixie Pixel. I don't know if you remember her from back in the day. She's still around on YouTube, but she talks about issues of internet and security and stuff. And I remember her 15 years ago or something really being an advocate for passphrases, because we have this idea that everything is a password that you have to remember. But if you can remember a certain very long phrase, that it's exponentially difficult to hack that.
Is it supposed to be like not nonsensical, or can it just be anything? Can it be like a racing horse named Sam?
I think it would be something like that. Yeah, it would have to be. It would probably be something that isn't. You probably wouldn't want to use a famously known phrase or something like that. It would probably be something you make up. But I don't know why that never kind of took hold. I don't know enough about this stuff. Maybe there's a reason why passphrases never became the thing, but they never did.
You know what? And whenever I'm stuck for a password, I just go 1, 2, 3, 4 and hope for the best.
I'm hacking into your accounts right now. And you know, here's another thing I learned, and is that, you know, there's kind of a CAPTCHA where they show you like a grid of pictures and they say, pick out the street lamps or pick out the bridges and stuff. Google uses that to train their AI as to what these things look like, what a stop sign looks like and what a curb looks like and what overhead wires look like and stuff. That's kind of, so it's like a benefit for them as well as a check for you to get in.
I don't know if this is like a myth or not, but I was told a long time ago, remember the early CAPTCHAs, and it used to be words with like some lines through them.
It was really hard
like
to read crooked sometimes.
You would have to like CR321. Apparently they used old books because Google had the Google Library, whatever, they scan in immense amounts of literature and books and all of the rest. And there were often characters that they couldn't, something's being scanned in, a page could have a whatever, the ink issue or whatever. So they would use those as CAPTCHAs and have people give their input as to what those letters actually were. So it was right. It was kind of the same thing that you're talking about, where
training,
you're training something or like getting some benefit out of a CAPTCHA.
Training those automatic driving cars not to run into
signs. they're going to be able to see stop. You know what, if it takes us telling a car what a stoplight is, we're in trouble, aren't we?
It's true, but you know, the more I read and find out about automatic, what's the word? I'm the word is escaping me. Self-driving cars or auto car.
Self-driving cars.
The more I read about it, the more I'm kind of like confident that that's really better than people driving. Eventually, I think you hear about a few things where something goes wrong on it, but for the most part, I think a computer is probably going to be better suited at that than humans are, because let's face it, we're all a bunch of apes when we drive. We don't.
Oh my gosh, we're all staring at our phones.
And it's ridiculous.
Signs and stuff like that. No, you know what? I fully agree with you.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. I think it'll be better if a computer could react quicker and knows, you know. Plus, it'll be a more relaxing way to travel. And I guess they're using these cars now in certain places as cabs. Hey, how was your week?
My week has been really good, actually. I've been spending this week putting on an exercise, which I think is really important. I'm going through and writing down everything I do work-wise, and then figuring out which bucket it falls into. Because after running a YouTube channel for this long and having the YouTube channel be kind of such an important part of the work week and like what gets produced, it's kind of strange to get out of that mindset and into like a different type of mindset. So I've been going through and I've been documenting all the different things that I do. And then I'm going to make a separate list of all the things that I actually want to do. And then I'm going to find a way to eliminate or at least get someone else to do all of the things that I don't want to do. Because Steve, I'm tired of wasting my time every week trying to figure out what video to upload to YouTube. My job is much more than that. Our businesses are much more than that.
Yeah.
But for some reason, there's this stupid part of me that always like has like my job is dictated upon what that kind of like what the video looks like, mm-hmm. or like what the whatever is. Did you have that issue anymore? Or you've been out of the YouTube upload cadence for a while now.
Yeah.
Do you still have like, you wake up and you have a day where you think about like, what content do I need to make?
Yeah. I mean, I'm always thinking about that, even though I don't upload on a regular basis. I think I do kind of the same thing as you, is I'm really good at making lists of things that I should do and I want to do. And then I stuck with lists. I just pulled up one here that I made. This is like 3 weeks ago. And it was just a list. This is on my Google Keep, you know. It's organized time for this. That's the title of my list. I have two things on there. And then I stopped doing the list. The first one was my soap making venture. I wanted to have set up a schedule of goals for that. Mm-hmm. I haven't done it. The second thing was to set up the memberships on my YouTube channel.
Oh,
I have done nothing with that thing. And every time I think about these, I think the problem is they're too big. I think I need to break it down and have smaller things to accomplish, because just like set up memberships is too big for me. My mind can't think like that. I should have like break that down and then do each of those little things, I guess.
I spent a lot of time decluttering this week too, because I don't know why I'm in this weird headset of trying to like move on from stuff which is just hanging around. And I guess that, funny, now that I actually say it out loud, I guess that kind of falls in line with my mental attitude towards work and stuff like that. It's like, it feels like I want a fresh perspective or like a fresh start. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you want to like change your roles within Clean My Space and what you're doing? So that's kind of like this list of things is like, okay, these are things that I've been doing a long time that I don't want to do anymore. So are you just going to outsource that to somebody else?
Melissa's going through and doing the exercise as well. Like we've just to my earlier point of like, we've just been doing the same thing for so long that we managed to like lift our heads up and be like, what do we actually do? Like, we make money from several different things, and like a bunch of different stuff happens in order for things to proceed. But like, I don't have a job. I just do a whole bunch of random different things.
It's a series of tasks that we're doing.
It's like, yeah. And I think when you get used to the cadence of like doing the YouTube or like producing content, I guess that's more so it. Producing content, because it extends to people who are on Instagram, who every day need to. We shared a video about Louis C.K. talking about exactly that, where it's like artists or people who like feel like they need to live up to the cadence of content as opposed to allowing the content to just kind of like flow through them and whatnot. And I finally realized at 46 years of age that I don't want to keep up with that mindset. And I realize how limiting that mindset has been in my ability to be productive, because I'm still sitting around worrying about what a YouTube video should be or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. So it's so freeing though, because it's so nice not to look at everything through the lens of content. And that was one of my resolutions, wasn't it? To look at everything through
not
the lens.
Everything is content. Yeah.
So this is me just like, yeah, expanding on that.
That video you sent me of Louis C.K., and this is a recent video, just kind of, it looked like an informal interview somebody had, was having yes. with him, like a sit down kind of chat. And he made a couple of really good points. And first, I'm glad to see Louis C.K. is doing really well right now. He's like totally in charge of his own comedy shows. He's got them on his website, and he does all of this. I guess the question was, how do you survive this algorithm? How do you create content for the algorithm? And his response was, that's really sick that you are creating content to make a machine happy rather than making content to make people happy. And that by everyone trying everything they can to fit within this mathematical formula that is the algorithm, everybody starts doing the same thing. Everybody starts doing what works. And so they're stripping away the things about themselves that don't feed that equation.
Yes.
And so you're just left with this bland sameness, and it is sick.
And he's been a guy who's actually been doing his own thing for so long. He was the first to like record and edit and produce his own specials. And he used to release them as MP3s or whatever on his website. He did the pay whatever you want for my right. comedy special thing. I hate his glasses. I gotta say, the jail glasses that are popular now, that's not a good look. But you know what? I think he's a great example of, it's very hard to cancel someone who, and I use that word loosely, but who's so self-sufficient.
Like, yeah.
he doesn't have to worry about a label dropping him or, you know, whatever. Someone
that
interfering
is
with,
important. Yeah. I mean, a YouTuber could take something from that, you know, because we're all just beholden to this platform that we don't own,
whatever the platform is. And I think the question was framed from young stand-up comedians trying to like make it or get noticed, and having to do like the Twitter grind of like posting yeah. constant jokes on Twitter and like working like da 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 da. And I think that's how the question was presented to him. It's like, well, how do you deal with the need for the whatever? And then he kind of like expanded into the like, you're writing for an algorithm as opposed to, you yeah. know,
and writing for audiences. Yeah.
And that's really what's changed. And I think that's also led to my like lack of interest in kind of just YouTube in general right now, because even the majority of the content that's being produced seems to be being produced to serve an algorithm. So it's serving the algorithm fine, but leading for a boring viewer experience as far as I'm concerned.
I guess the response to that would be, well, by creating content for an algorithm, that algorithm is what people want to see. So indirectly, you're creating content that people want to see.
That literally is TikTok, isn't it?
That's just it. And I'm not sure what people want to see is always going to be what you should be producing, at least to be fair to yourself and to be authentic and to just not become a slave to the algorithm.
And it still seems like YouTube's a place where you have a fair amount of creators who are adding to the algorithm in a creative kind of, not trailblazing way, but like in an innovative way. And it seems like TikTok is just like a big circle jerk of like
it totally
the
is.
same thing over and over. Like I haven't mm-hmm. seen growth or like whatever. Like with YouTube, you can, yeah, sure, there's the cliches and there's the like all the things that you can say are very YouTube-y and all of the rest. But like with TikTok, and I know I've said this before, but like I still submit that people refer to the platform more so than the individual like components of the platform. With YouTube, you have to be like, well, there's PewDiePie and there's da-da-da and there's da-da-da. And there, you can come to YouTuber and you can be a YouTuber, and that could mean a vastly different amount of things. You could be a woodworking channel, a cleaning channel, and whatnot. With TikTok, it seems to be like it's all TikTok videos. And I know that sounds stupid, but
you
it's
spend
not like
your time watching TikTok rather than YouTube, where you might be, oh, I spent some time watching a certain creator or a certain person. Or
and with YouTube, you can be like, then I watched an hour and a half long dissertation from a thing, and then I watched a legal court case, and then I watched some television shows because there were some clips, and then I watched a funny compilation of whatever. And I think what my larger point was, and you're getting it, which is like TikTok is literally just TikTok. It's the exact same type of video, you know, with like such a small amount of like tropes. It's that woman's voice, it's like whatever the trend current trending, and it's not even like full songs which trend and become popular. Like it's segment, like 4 second segments, and then everybody then would need to use that sound whether or not that sound fits with their video. And that's the rub with TikTok, because then everything just mm-hmm. sounds the same and looks the same, and you're just you're consuming the algorithm. You're not consuming content being curated.
And it's probably why it's so popular with younger people, is because younger people are real imitative that way. You really want to fit in and do the things that I was the same way. Whatever your friends and your social group is doing, you do the same thing. So if one person on TikTok does some sort of challenge or dance, you'll probably want to do the same thing to fit right.
Did you ever do any of the social challenges? Did you ever do a water bucket challenge?
I did the water bucket, yeah.
I think everybody had to.
That might be the only one I did do.
That one came around at a time that everybody was like, you have to.
yeah, gotta do it. Yeah, that was one of those like slacktivist kind of things where
remember that.
The whole point of it was kind of lost. Yeah. You were supposed to do it and then donate money to the ALS or something.
Well, at least you remembered it was ALS. A lot of people are like, water bucket challenge, was that cancer? And I remember they heralded did it as like, oh, this was such a huge success. And it literally was a few years later that it was kind of started to be seen as for what it was, which was like people just using it for views. Imagine that, Steve, people doing it just to get attention and views and not for the good reason.
Here's something I was thinking about the other day. Well, not the other day, it's probably a month ago. So I stopped using hashtags on Instagram. I don't post a lot to Instagram, but I stopped using hashtags because it occurred to me that hashtags, I think, are useless. I don't know if people really clicking on hashtags. Is that a way people, if you post a video on TikTok with all of these hashtags, are people finding you? They can't be that many people who are clicking on, you know, boards with splinters on them. Or something, you know, I mean, people use these weird hashtags, and I think that you're wasting your time.
And it just kind of looks needy, doesn't it? When you have to like
it
add to your point. It's like, here's a picture of my daughter and me, and we're smiling, and this is wonderful. Happy Valentine's Day, y'all. Hashtag Valentine's, hashtag Valentine's Day, hashtag Love Day, hashtag Love Yourself Day, hashtag.
Well, it's funny because you can see the people who come from Instagram and have started YouTube channels because they'll put their hashtags in the titles of their videos. Yeah. I'm like, nobody's using that on YouTube at all, I guarantee.
And I guess another thing to consider is when you're doing the hashtags now, at least on Instagram, they'll show how popular the hashtags are. So sometimes if I'll take like a nice picture or something like that, I'll be like, well, it'd be nice to maybe get some new followers of people who like photography. So I'm going to hashtag photography. And it's like 217 million posts. Yeah. It's like, but my picture of the moon, let me tell you, it's going to, I'm going it's viral. It's a little bit of hope. It's like buying a lottery ticket, I think.
Like, I guess maybe so. You don't want to be the one person missing out.
I mean, have you had something go like get a whole bunch of views and it wasn't supposed to and you've attributed it to a hashtag? Probably not.
I haven't, but I don't know enough about Instagram to really, I don't know. I feel like I'm just lost with Instagram sort of. I always keep telling myself, I need to post more on there. And I look and my last post was like a month ago and I don't, but you know, there's other guys on there who have like the same size audience as me and they post all the time and they're not growing at all. The channel or their Instagram doesn't seem to be growing.
And it's impossible to get exposure now on Instagram. It seems like they've throttled the platform so much that when you post it, and God forbid you post a picture on Instagram, something that's not a reel. And I tried posting six pictures. I was like, make a carousel, six pictures. It's like, do you want to make a reel? It's like, no, I just wanted to. But
you know, I kind of like to see those photos because whenever I see photos in my Instagram feed, it's from somebody who doesn't give two shits about Instagram. It's like a celebrity or a film director that I follow or somebody who's just like, hey, here's some cool stuff I'm doing. It's kind of like the way Instagram started out where you were like sharing things with a social group and here's pictures that I'm doing. I don't care if anybody sees this. It doesn't make any difference to me. I'm not here as a content creator. I'm using this to share pictures. And so I kind of like seeing that. I like to see, I follow this family that makes movies and they're always posting like pictures from their latest set and things. And they get, you know, it's for a very specific audience of people who want to see those. And they don't care if you don't.
But then it just became another place to like post your content to get exposure to like whatever. And it got 2016 when I remember at the end of all of our videos we'd be like, follow us on Instagram and follow us and da, 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 because it was the thing. It's like, hey, if you want to send us a picture, if you want to see what's going on behind the scenes, you know, go follow us there. And that's really what it was. You'd get to see like the families and you get to see kind of like not what you see on YouTube, at least in our case. And then, and then it just changed. And now everybody just uses it to put up their TikToks as Instagram reels.
Yeah. Well, it's become like a short form content has become sort of one mega platform between the three, Instagram, TikTok and YouTube Shorts, all three of those, because everybody just posts the exact same things. You're cross-posting to all three of those. So it just becomes the short form platform is all of these three things, I think.
Do you spend any time on your Facebook page or?
Well, see, now I'm doing this Vuv. They do it.
Oh, right. They take care of all of that. And there's still a lot of people on Facebook. There's a lot of older folk.
It's older people,
I mean,
I don't understand Facebook at all.
Are we saying that in the sense that we're not older people and we're talking about those people?
I know. I always wonder about that too. I'm like, oh, wait a second. I always talk about, oh, these old people. Oh, wait a second. I'm almost 57. Did you know? Okay, speaking of old people, this is the good segue into. I got a rant just for a little bit about Madonna.
Oh, okay.
All right. So you've seen the pictures of her from the Grammys.
I have.
She's, you know, completely done the makeover. And kind of this general ridicule of Madonna and for her daring to do, to change her appearance. Well, here's the thing about Madonna. I got my very first Madonna album, which was, I guess maybe it was called Madonna One. I don't know, because a girlfriend bought it for me back in 1982 or whenever that thing came out. And I was not a Madonna fan. And I've never been a Madonna fan. But I love the way that she has always been changing herself. Yes. And always been reinventing herself. And the people that are coming out constantly making fun of her appearance, which clearly she's had a lot of work done, and she's done all of this stuff to herself. She's like in her 60s now. When you're ridiculing people because of their appearance, it's really a sign of your own insecurities, I think. And frankly, I would rather see what Madonna has done to herself than a guy my age who has just completely let himself go and doesn't do shit to take care of himself at all. I think that body modification is the ultimate way to, like, say, my body is mine. It's not owned by any god or government, and I can do with it whatever I want. And I'm really happy to see that Madonna kind of just owns that. Good for her. I mean, if she wants to change herself, because we all change ourselves in one way or another. I mean, we might shave, we might cut our hair, or we might try to lose weight. These are all body modifications. People who put tattoos on themselves. A tattoo is the greatest form of ownership of your own body and saying, I own this. This is me that does it. So I don't know. It's kind of just drives me crazy when people, especially when it comes to women, we have this ideal that you've got to look young, but then when they get older and want to look young, they go, but not that way. Ah. We don't want you to look like that. Or the term, we want you to age gracefully. What exactly does that mean? You want them to have white hair, look the way you want them to be. You want everybody to look the same,
or to just be the way that you want them to be. It's that kids should be seen and not heard crowd, where it's like, my system of how things work are the way it should be. But Madonna's been jiggling people's wedding vegetables since. I mean, she did. When was the sex book? That was standing naked on Hollywood Boulevard. Like, first of all, a celebrity being like, I remember when, who was it? Miley Cyrus started posting like she would show her breast or something like that.
Then she did Wrecking Ball. Wrecking Ball was the big game changer.
Yeah. Britney Spears went through her kind of slutty stage, and Christina Aguilera went through her slutty. Yeah. Like, everybody went through this stage that Madonna like did legit 10 years before anybody else. And didn't do it for the sake of, that's the best thing about Madonna. She didn't do any of that for that reason. Like, she's such an incredible trendsetter. And then the cone boobs during the...
That was funny. I remember
the Vogue period.
Yeah. Even to her very first album, people, I remember it very well. And it had to have been probably 82 or something. And she was
burning crosses in her videos.
Very controversial. Yeah, wearing all the religious iconography and stuff. And Like a Virgin was very... And so this is kind of her thing that she does. And man, good for her to try to do something different. People are kind of afraid to see that. And then they make fun of her and they ridicule her. And I think she's got the last laugh, really. If she wants to look however she wants to look. If a guy wants to look like an alien, let him look like an alien. Who cares?
And yeah, you're right. She's completely owning it. And I love the way that she's doing it, where it's just kind of like a not giving a fuck approach for someone who has been so about what that image looks like and just been leaking sex, to lean into the, like, I love that she wore like a suit and a tie and just like, you're all going to talk about this, aren't you? And we live in a time now where it's like, talk is like, who cares? Like, because we're literally talking about her right now, and whether we like her or not, we're talking about her. So mission accomplished, Madonna.
I was happy to see I didn't watch the Grammys, but I because most of the music there is not really music I'm interested in, but I was happy to see Wet Leg won Best Alternative Group, and their song for and wet leg. I like to feel like I discovered wet leg
because did they mention anything in the acceptance speech regarding you?
They should have said, and Steve found us when we first had our first couple of songs, you know, and so I think I might have sent you one of their songs way back like a year. They've only been around for like a year and a half, you know, and they were I'm like, oh, you got to see this. This is so cool. I love this kind of music. But it was really funny because they posted this kind of compilation of brief interview clips from the Grammys, and they were totally trolling everybody with this thing where they got this thing where whenever somebody asked them, what do you think about the night? What do you think? They would always say, it's just a magical evening. And so like every time they would do that, and even on their acceptance speech, they would just say, it's just magical being here. And then you could see them just cracking up. And I remember wondering, why are they laughing? And then I saw, oh, I see what they're doing. They're trolling the Grammys.
What an awesome opportunity to troll the Grammys.
It was, I know. Watched. Yeah, it reminds me of, who was it that it was... No, 21 Pilots, they took their pants off on their award because they said when they were kids, they wanted to, it was like, oh man, we want to make music. And if we ever get, you know, make it and win an award, we should just take our pants off. So they stuck to that.
That's awesome. I remember the guys from South Park went and they did mushrooms right before going.
Yeah, they were, I think they were on acid
or something along those lines.
They were tripping at the Academy Awards.
Academy Awards.
That was amazing. Man, oh man. I've been seeing a lot of concerts. Last year I saw a whole bunch of concerts. It was nice to get out. So I've got a couple coming up here. So next month I'm going to go see the Beths again. And then, you know who I got tickets to see later this year is Rob Zombie. You know who he's playing with? It's Rob Zombie, Alice Cooper. And so this is like old school, old music, and Ministry, which I think Ministry is really cool.
Horror rock or like...
Kind of. And Ministry was like that industrial rock from the 90s, you know. Al Jorgensen. Funny thing about Ministry is they started out in the 80s as a synth pop band.
Yes.
And then they totally changed genre.
Depeche Mode styles, where you start poppy and all of the rest. And they have probably the best named album ever, Ministry.
Jesus built my heart rock.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a fantastic.
I love that music. It's just so hardcore, you know. Well, it's not hardcore music, but it's industrial, but it's got it's just a cool sound. It's a lot like, I guess, Nine Inch Nails. And
do you listen to anything now and go like, that's just too much? Like I see that I know a lot of people like Slipknot and some of those more aggressive, but like I'll admit it. I just don't get it. It's just a little too hard and a little too aggressive.
So here's the thing. As the hardest, most aggressive concert I saw, well, last year was when I saw Cannibal Corpse. And I saw
Oh, I'm surprised Cannibal Corpse was an aggressive concert with a name like Cannibal Corpse.
Well, they've been around forever. You know, they have. Since the 80s. So they were in Pet Detective. You know, I think that was where most people know them from. But they were there with three other bands. You go to these metal shows and it's just a long, long show. So there was them, Dark Funeral, Black Anvil, and Immolation. So there was two death metal and two black metal bands. And I don't know their music that well to tell the difference between their songs.
Good.
But I wanted to go for the experience, and damn, I ranked it as probably one of my favorite concerts of the year, just because it was so intense, and I'm going to be down there. I want to be right in the thick of things, so I got involved into the whole mosh pit, which was a scary ordeal, especially for a guy in his 50s who's never done this before. And you just get thrown around, banged around, and did it for a little bit. And then I kind of worked my way out to the edge and tried to kind of, but I found myself keeping an eye on the whole audience was most of it. And then watching what was on stage was like half of it, I guess.
Okay, so you're saying it was like almost a completely different experience.
It was an experience because the music is so loud and so intense, and just those blast beats on the drums, and then the black metal bands. Like Dark Anvil, I guess, is pretty popular, like the Swedish black metal, which has all these, you know, satanic themes and everything. But it's a little performative, corny in a way, I think, that probably their audience doesn't want you to call them corny. But to me, it seems like it's a little goofy in a way. I kind of prefer the death metal. Black metal, much more hard than
that. Right there is going to be the teaser for this episode.
I myself am into death.
But to get to your original point, I like to experience as many different kinds of as much music as I can. Here's another. Okay, you know who I just recently listened to? This will surprise you. I don't know if you remember back in the late 2000s, it certainly wouldn't be something you were listening to. It was Disney music. It was Ali and AJ. So they were a real pop duo. The one girl went on to do sitcoms and stuff on Disney Channel. And it was catchy, kind of, you know, Disney radio kind of pop music, which, of course, it's not really my thing. But they just come out with some new songs now, which sounds way more indie and folky and guitar. It's like they've grown up, and I like it. I like it a lot. So I think it's just good to stay open to music and what's happening at the moment. If people say they don't like any of the music today, it's because you're not listening to any of the music today. You're not trying to find any good music, especially guitar rock. Guitar rock right now is super, super popular.
Yeah, no, it's true. And wow, 14 years in between
for Ali and AJ.
So yeah. Kind of the same thing. You know what? It's fascinating to see how a band or a group or a singer can kind of like grow and progress that way.
Right.
Quite like you said about ministry.
Yeah, and I kind of think you get to that stage where you're a little bit older and you're like, I don't really need to impress the way I used to feel like I needed to impress people. It's like, okay, I've made it through television and all these other things. Now I can kind of just make music that I like to make. And I really admire that.
You almost get faced with the decision of making music for the algorithm or making music for yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
And possibly running into, like, I remember Rush was like, obviously in the 70s, Rush was like progressive rock and da-da-da-da. And then in the 80s when synth, like,
they
got pretty kind of heavy into it,
and
I remember there was, because both of my brothers are huge Rush fans, and I remember them liking it, but them talking about how like a large component of the Rush audience hated that Geddy Lee wanted to include these stupid synths and whatever. And sure, they never made, you know, Tom's, like, it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't what maybe you loved about them, but like, it was such an interesting part of their sound, and it became and it takes a band willing to not, like I said, not make it just for like what people want to hear. And you end up like listening to yourself, and it's like, yeah, you know what? It's going to be different now. I want to make different music.
Yeah.
Radiohead did that as well.
Oh, Radiohead.
Literally came out of the gate with like their biggest song was the song that compelled Tom York to like literally rail against that and make albums which were deliberately not musical and not radio friendly.
Radiohead is a one-hit wonder.
They are a one-hit wonder.
Literally,
that
yeah.
song was massive.
Creep.
I mean, yeah. And yeah. It was at a time where it's like that music was just, oh, everything was just aligned.
I don't think he wants to play that anymore at all.
There was a long period of time where they didn't play it. And I believe they've come to a new respect for it, because it was the whole lead of the story. Like, I mean, they couldn't have been in the position that they are without that song. So it's kind of like a necessary evil. But yeah, it's Alanis Morissette did the same thing. Alanis Morissette was a really popular pop star, especially here in Canada. She was huge. Kids music, like teen music, and then she came with You Ought to Know and talking about blowjobs in theaters and things like that. And everyone's like, ooh, Alanis is growing up. And she's got Flea playing bass, in case anybody didn't know. Taylor Hawkins was the drummer on that album. Flea was, or at least, and you ought to know, Taylor Hawkins was the drummer, Flea was the bassist. And I think the guitarist was also a pretty important person.
I saw an interview recently, or listened to one on Mark Maron's podcast, WTF, with Flea, and that was an interesting interview. Wow, that guy, he has done a lot of music, and his life is just so bass. You know, I mean, everything is playing bass. He loves it.
He's like Charlie Watts, the drummer from the Charlie Watts, yeah, that's his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, the drummer from the Rolling Stone also had like a whole jazz, like da-da-da. It's like these people who like you only know through like either their band or like this one thing, and then they have all of this other talent or this diversity in what they like.
Flea said that his favorite band, when asked, what was your favorite band of all time? What is the band? He said X. Have you ever heard of X? They were an LA band, kind of a punk, I guess it would be a punk.
Yeah. Like punk 80s, band, maybe 70s, hardcore, 80s?
Probably 80s into the 90s, maybe. But that's who he considered like his influence was X.
How about if I were to ask you what your favorite band is? Or you like your favorite musician?
Favorite musician. That's, I don't know if I can.
I know, because everybody, so agreed. Everybody does that. Everybody's like, I can't just pick one. But you're forced to. Like you're going on a desert, so it's the desert, let's make it the desert island thing. You're going on a desert island, you can only bring one band's or one musician's.
Wow, I got to think about that, an individual musician, especially you break it down to like, there's so many good guitar players for different reasons, and the drummers, I can certainly think of, who's the drummer for Blink 182? Travis Barker.
Travis Barker.
Yeah, I would say he probably ranks up there as far as drummers go. I don't know. Who do you think of when you think of virtuoso? Right now, for bands, for me right now, it is definitely the Beths. There's two bands, Beths, and I'm really into Horse Girl.
I don't know Horse Girl.
So it's also this kind of real, it's guitar rock. They're a trio. It's noise rock, I guess you'd call it. It sounds really good. It sounds retro in some ways, but it sounds very modern in other ways.
I've been thinking about it and thinking about it, and I realized that it changes all the time. And I could easily say like a band like Radiohead has probably been always been just my favorite band.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're talking about being able to just have one person's music with you, so you'd want to pick someone who was like diverse and did a lot of different stuff, I would pick Jack White.
Blues,
like
does everything,
folk mute, like everything, plays his own, like his own handmade guitars and stuff.
He plays like this toy guitar that he's had at like he got it at like a dime store or something for $10 when he was a kid.
Strings them with like rusty old strip, but he loves like he's going for just. I remember hearing once that Daft Punk. Mm-hmm. Someone referred to Daft Punk as a group in search of the perfect beat. And I think Jack White is a good example of the dude in search of like the perfect tone from a guitar, like the perfect sound from a guitar, because he understands sonically. He has a record factory, actually. He presses records in
third band. He also has an upholstery business, believe it or not.
He's such an interesting character, and he dresses like Willy Wonka.
Yeah, that's kind of his. And yeah, I loved it when it was White Stripes, because they intentionally made this relationship between him and Meg White ambiguous. People didn't know if that was
brother,
his sister, his wife,
husband, wife.
And it turned out she was his wife, and then they got divorced shortly after. They're still like really good friends, but she became like a recluse. She's real outside, doesn't grant interviews, and interesting at what happened. I'd like to know more about Meg White. And once in a while, you'll see an article about her, but she like fell off the grid.
Amazing. An incredibly average drummer at best. Like,
oh yeah, that was their, that so was their incredible. Whole thing.
That was the All whole
she,
thing.
She had like a drum, a hi-hat, a bass. And that was like the whole set, you know, a cymbal.
I was reading an article about the song Seven Nation Army, how it was the most recent song to move into just like that echelon of songs which is played in like every sporting event. Like, yeah. You know how there's
probably the most heard song in the world right now.
It just has that, like, you can hear it in your dentist office and you'll hear it being played in between, you know, plays at a hockey game, at a thing, or you can play it at a party. You could play it like everywhere. It's just, and everybody that,
yeah.
And it was just, they were talking about how it's become an anthem. It's the most recent song to hit that level of like, We Are the Champions by Queen, where it's like, everybody kind of knows it, whether you know it or not, everybody kind of like recognizes. And I think it's a huge testament to not only the White Stripes, but to Jack. And I love the fact that they did the red and the white.
Yeah.
They did the colors.
Yeah.
Like a candy color.
They were very well branded.
Excellent branding.
Have you been getting these Telegram scams on your, I'm sure you have, on the comments in your videos? They're the people like, and they will copy my profile picture and then they'll use that in their comments. They set up these fake channels and they say, you've just won a prize, text me on Telegram, and then it has their number. It's gotten so annoying. I've had to like constantly, I'm adding them to my blocked words Telegram. I don't even really understand Telegram. What is it? It's like WhatsApp or something, right?
Is it like, do you call them? They give you like a phone number?
It's like
number?
A texting thing, and somehow this is a scam thing that's running, but people have contacted me and they're like, I thought this was you. And I'm like, no, it's not me. Stop it.
You know, we were talking about that. I don't remember what the catalyst is, but I was telling you that I received in the mail a solicitation or an invoice, a fake invoice, as it were, from one of those domain scraper companies, which used to send out those like fake invoice. Oh, we noticed, because when you register a domain, you have to publicly register some information. So you register your address and your name and da, da, da. All of that's publicly available. So companies will go and find domains which are expiring, find the contact information, and basically just send a fake invoice out to these people saying, hey, it's almost time for, as a courtesy, we're going to reach out and you can renew with us for $29 a year, or the best value is if you do it for 3 years or something like that. And basically you hopefully it gets sent to someone who's just working in an office who thinks it looks official, and they fill it out and they send it back.
Right. Yeah.
I'm surprised that they're still doing it in 2023 and this still works, because I legit remember this from the earliest days of the internet, like the who is information getting out there, and then you getting these renew your domain before it expires. And I'm like, it ends up making you think, like, who falls for this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, legit. I get it. I understand some people will get wrapped into it, but like, really, who's thinking that a comment on a YouTube video talking about winning a prize.
Yeah.
And I have to go to this thing, which I don't understand, and da 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 da, that wouldn't be enough to just be like, this is clearly a scam.
We got one of these. What was the thing you sent me the other day? It was, and somebody sent it through our Chad and Steve email account, right?
Yes. You get it? Occasionally people go to
and it was like a blackmail scheme
it was.
They were trying to run.
I'll read it. So therefore saved it. Here we are, waiting patiently for you to come home and fuck me. No, those were the other ones, and then it's just a link to a thing. Okay, so Parlene Blanchard, your site has been hacked. Please forward this email to someone in your company who is allowed to make important decisions. We have hacked
company.
Our company. We have hacked
important decisions too. Goodness. I like this part.
We have hacked your website, chadandsteve.com, and extracted your databases. How did this happen? Our team has found a vulnerability within your site and we were able to exploit it.
After our databases, Chad. We have databases.
With all that information, Steve. after finding the vulnerability, we were able to get your database credentials and extract your entire database and move the information to an offshore server. Spoiler, it already isn't an offshore server. What does this mean? We will systematically go through a series of steps to totally damaging your reputation. First, your database will be leaked or sold to the highest bidder. Good luck with that.
They're assuming we already have a reputation.
And there's a highest bidder looking for
there's our database. There's a whole network of people and one our database of nothing.
next, if there are emails found, they will be emailed that their information has been sold or leaked and that your chadandsteve.com website was at fault, thusly damaging your reputation. And you'll have angry customers / associates.
I don't want that.
Yeah, I know. Lastly, any links that you have indexed in the search engine will be de-indexed based off black hat techniques that we used in the past to de-index our targets.
They're going to delist us from Google. All right,
let's wrap this up. How do we stop this, Steve? We are willing to refrain from destroying your site's reputation for a small fee. The current fee is $3,000 in Bitcoin. 0.14 bitcoins.
Seems reasonable.
Yep. No, I mean, that's not bad. It's like 15.
I think I would ask
each.
For more. Want like $10,000 or something.
The amount, approximately $3,000. And then there's an address that we can think. You can manually copy and paste it into the thing. Once you have paid.
Nice. That's handy of them to do it manually.
No, it is nice. Once you have paid, we will automatically get informed about your payment. Please note that you'll have to make the payment within 72 hours of receiving this message or the database will leak. Emails will be dispatched and the de-indexing of your website will begin. Okay, how do I pay or how do I get bitcoins? And then they
first we'll have to split it. So we'll each have to cover $1,500.
So that's 0.07 Bitcoin each. And we can easily buy bitcoins via several websites or
Go to Coinbase and we'll transfer it right over there. Because I don't want our database to be compromised by Black Hat.
No, it's true. Black Hat, 72 hours. This is well past 72 hours. I'm assuming at this point.
Nobody's even listening to this probably because they've completely scraped us from the internet.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's the last part. If you decide not to pay, which we haven't, we will start the attack at the indicated date, okay, and uphold it until you do. There is no countermeasure. You will only end up wasting more money and time finding a solution. We will completely destroy your reputation among Google and your customers. So there you go.
Our customers. Yeah. We'll never sell anything again.
So to everyone listening who went to our website and gave your email address and credit card information, I'm sorry. We apologize.
We were just farming it too, really, for these.
I wonder how much they got.
Who falls for this crap? I mean, seriously, I don't. Every time I hear about internet scams, I think, how does it work? How does that happen? Because I don't know. I guess if you send out enough, somebody has to follow through because it's going to be a series of steps you've got to go through to get to. And if somebody is savvy enough to understand how to use Bitcoin for transfers and stuff, why would they fall for this?
And is it for the site owner or is it just anybody who comes across that comment and they're just hoping that? No, because it's literally saying that it's the site owner. So I need to be...
Forward it to somebody who can make important decisions.
Yeah. Do we have anybody in our organization who can make important decisions?
I'll get out our organizational chart.
Well, I will say one thing. It's nice to get a comment on the website. Take whatever we can get.
That's the funny thing. They're like, we're going to destroy your email.
Yes. And what do you think was on the database? Like, really, all of our podcasts.
Well, you know what I still get in the mail, snail mail, is for my trademark, because I have Woodworking for Mere Mortals and The Weekend Woodworker are trademarked, registered trademarks. And I get these mail, things sent through the mail that say, you need to keep your trademark active or something. And it's not real because I just have a lawyer deal with all of that. But they, it's like a $30 fee or something. Here's what we're going to offer. And I have a feeling you're right. What happens is these just come into the larger companies and somebody just like, I don't know what, just pay it. You know, it's just a thing, whatever. It must be a service, must be something somebody signed up for.
I remember back when I used to work in a warehouse many, many years ago, I'm seeing those types of fake invoices come. Like it would be the fluorescent tube people be like, oh, we have way better pricing and sign here. And they would basically send you an invoice. So you'd be signing an invoice. It was just so disingenuous and such a tricky way to like get someone to.
Yeah. A lot of them, they'd like to make it look like an official government
thing
where you have to like remove the perforated sides from it. Those are annoying to try to open the three different sides and then unfold.
So Perlene Blanchard, if you're listening, in hopes that we somehow read your comment and then would mention it on the podcast. If you're listening, it didn't work. You're not getting the money from us. We know that this isn't real and we're not paying more than $1,500.
Well, as soon as we do that, she's going to just be wanting
it's
more.
It's true.
Perlene is like
it's
that.
True.
Never negotiate. We should ask her if she'd negotiate. I always wish that I could. There's been people who have done this, kind of follow through on some of these scams just to see where they all lead. I don't have the time or the energy or the know-how to do it without getting seriously screwed up, you know, because you've got to click on links and stuff. So I assume you would have to have like a computer that you don't mind
you have to have a
getting
burner
all screwed up. Yeah.
Most interesting channel that I've seen kind of recently was literally that, like a scam hacker or like a scam rebuttal guy who goes and like does all of this and does calls with the scammers who are trying to take over their computer and da-da-da-da. And it's incredible the size of these operations in these massive office buildings with hundreds and hundreds of people on phones.
Did you see the Mark Rober? You know, he does sends glitter bombs and stuff. And he did one recently that kind of showed they had hidden cameras on these Indian scam farms or something, huge offices, and how this all works and how they get somebody on the phone, usually somebody who's elderly, and they just break you down until these people are giving them money.
Yeah. So the secret is not to get old, and if you do get old, just don't click on anything on the internet.